from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen said Thursday that the alliance would consider seriously any request from the Iraqi government for assistance in dealing with the insurgency by Islamic State fighters. Rasmussen spoke with reporters arriving at the NATO summit in a golf resort outside the Welsh city of Newport. The Ukrainian president and the heads of the self-proclaimed People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk have said they are ready to order a ceasefire if peace talks in Minsk on Friday are successful. Pietro Poroshenko said on the sidelines of a NATO summit in Wales Thursday, quote, at 1400 local time Friday, provided the meeting takes place, I will call on the general staff to set up a bilateral ceasefire, and we hope that the implementation of the peace plan will begin tomorrow, close quote. A similar announcement came from the heads of the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics. On Wednesday, Poroshenko expressed great hope that the peace process in Ukraine would commence on Friday, when representatives of Kiev, Moscow, and the OSCE are scheduled to meet. According to Russian media reports, the announcements paved the way for implementing the seven-step peace plan proposed by Russian President Vladimir Putin Wednesday. Kiev has taken heavy losses in the fighting in the east. A representative of the Ukrainian Security and Defense Council said Thursday that 837 members of the country's armed forces had been killed as of September 4th. Those figures do not include casualties near the town of Ilyovansk, where Ukrainian troops were encircled by local self-defense forces. They also do not include what some say are thousands of defections from the Ukrainian military. Meanwhile, there will be U.S. boots on the ground in Ukraine. We have this report from Press TV.
The Pentagon says Washington will send 200 troops to take part in a U.S.-led military exercise in Ukraine later this month. This is the first deployment of U.S. ground troops to Ukraine since Kiev engaged in a bloody conflict with pro-Russians in the east earlier this year. The annual exercise, dubbed Rapid Trident, is set for September the 13th to the 26th and will involve more than a dozen countries. The drill is due to be held in Yavoriv, about 60 kilometers from Lviv in western Ukraine.
A day after the group, alternately known as ISIL, ISIS, or the Islamic State, threatened to bring war to Muslim areas inside the Russian Federation, India put several of its states on heightened alert Thursday after Al-Qaeda announced the formation of a wing in that country. According to Reuters, Al-Qaeda chief Ayman al-Zawahiri promised in a video to spread Islamic rule across the Indian subcontinent. India, which regards the message as authentic, has warned local governments, according to a source, after a security briefing with Home Minister Rajnath Singh. Iran's central bank has received a total of $1 billion of previously frozen oil revenues from Japan. The funds are part of an extended nuclear agreement with the so-called P5 Plus One group. Iran, the U.S., Russia, China, France, Germany, and the U.K. agreed in July to extend a six-month interim accord until November 24th. In return for continuing action to curb its nuclear program, Tehran would receive $2.8 billion during the four-month extension of its funds held in foreign banks. During the January to July period, $4.2 billion was paid. The U.S. says more than $100 billion of Iran's fund are held abroad. The group will hold a new round of nuclear talks in New York on September 18th, according to EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton. The talks will be preceded by bilateral meetings at the level of political directors. Bilateral nuclear talks between Iran and the U.S. began in Geneva Thursday. It's the second time that the two sides have met since Iran and the six-member group missed the July 20th deadline to resolve their differences on Iran's nuclear program.
I have therefore, in accordance with the solemn responsibilities and the oath of my office, taken the following action. Units of the National Guard have been and are now being mobilized with the mission to maintain or restore the peace and good order of this community. Advanced units are already on duty on the grounds of Central High School.
That was the voice of then-Governor Orville Faubus of Arkansas September 4, 1957, 57 years ago, this Thursday, as he announced the mobilization of the state's National Guard to block enforcement of a federal district court order to desegregate the all-white Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, to allow African-American students to attend. Faubus declared that he would not follow the decree. When 9 African-American students attempted to enter the school on September 4th of 1957, a crowd of several hundred angry, belligerent whites confronted them. Hundreds of National Guardsmen, called up by Faubus, blocked the students' entry into the school. NAACP Legal Defense Fund attorney Thurgood Marshall, who would later become a Supreme Court justice, spoke with the press shortly after Faubus took his action.
Well, we consider this case important as one of the segregation cases, but in addition to the fact that this one involved the appearance of the National Guard on the scene, and for the first time in any of our cases, it's the action of the governor that eventually will have to be brought into court.
Then you see it as a state-federal conflict of authority.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that.
At the time, many wondered openly why then-President Dwight D. Eisenhower seemed to be taking a hands-off approach to the crisis. Herbert Brownell Jr. was Eisenhower's attorney general at the time.
He felt that, and was told by many advisors, that Governor Faubus could be reasoned with, and that an amicable solution could be found in the Little Rock crisis.
A week and a half later, Faubus met with Eisenhower at the president's Rhode Island vacation retreat.
The president thought that he had persuaded Governor Faubus to go back and allow the black children to enter the high school peaceably. It was quite a surprise to him. He felt let down when Governor Faubus decided against allowing the black children to enter the high school.
However, when Faubus returned to Little Rock, he decided to simply withdraw the guard, leaving only the locals to themselves, with tensions running high and the now 3-week-long spectacle taking place on television in front of the eyes of the world. Eisenhower decided to act.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. For a few minutes this evening, I should like to speak to you about the serious situation that has arisen in Little Rock. In that city, under the leadership of demagogic extremists, disorderly mobs have deliberately prevented the carrying out of proper orders from a federal court. Local authorities have not eliminated that violent opposition. And under the law, I yesterday issued a proclamation calling upon the mob to disperse. This morning, the mob again gathered in front of the Central High School of Little Rock, obviously for the purpose of again preventing the carrying out of the court's order relating to the admission of Negro children to that school. Whenever normal agencies prove inadequate to the task, and it becomes necessary for the executive branch of the federal government to use its powers and authority to uphold federal courts, the president's responsibility is inescapable. In accordance with that responsibility, I have today issued an executive order directing the use of troops under federal authority to aid in the execution of federal law at Little Rock, Arkansas.
The president sent 1,000 U.S. troops to Little Rock. The very next day, the African-American students entered under heavily armed guard. The episode served as a catalyst for the integration of other segregated schools in the U.S., a process that, some 57 years later, remains, in the main, undone.
Hello, who is it? Hello.
Can you turn that off?
No, I can't.
Okay, I said turn it off.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Turn it off.
Do you have a warrant?
That was the opening sound on a camera phone recorded in Inglewood, California, that's trending on YouTube. The video shows an exchange last week between Aval Amarell and a pair of police officers who knocked on his door, purportedly searching for a neighbor accused of beating his girlfriend.
Hold on. We have a baby here. Okay, let me explain yourself.
Okay, I'm sure at the sheriff's department. We're looking for a wanted felon.
Okay, he's not here.
He's not
turn
here.
Turn that off, because I don't know what it is.
It's a cell phone.
Okay, don't put it in my face.
What's your name? I don't have to tell you that. Do you have a warrant? Okay. First of all, I need three types of ID.
Okay.
Explain who you are, because you could be anybody dressed up in a uniform.
Really?
By the Supreme Court, yes.
You want to play games?
I'm not playing games.
I'm going to drag you out if you...
That's why I'm recording this. Straight to YouTube.
Is there anybody else in the house, man?
No, there's nobody else in the house. There's me and my family. That's it.
Okay, let me explain it to you, okay? We got a female in the apartment complex, just got beat up by her parolee at large boyfriend.
I watched the whole thing.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. From my window. Why don't you help us and step out and tell us what's going on?
I seen the dude walk off. I seen him. I heard him arguing.
Do you know him?
No, I don't. I
see him. Told that you guys are friends with him.
No, I see him in my... he's my neighbor.
Do you have an ID?
As far as that. No, I don't have to describe that to you. Do you have a warrant? Or do you suspect me of committing a crime?
I don't. You could be harboring a fugitive.
I'm not harboring a fugitive. I'm not. There's nobody in here. If you want to check, please go get a warrant. There's nobody else in here.
Sir, just show us ID and then we'll make sure.
If you're not him,
I'm not him. I'm not him.
Okay? We don't know what he looks like, okay?
Okay.
Show us your ID,
okay,
guy.
She'll explain to you what he looks like.
Describe what he looks like.
Okay.
Okay, she didn't describe what he looks like. I don't have to describe my ID.
Okay, grab your ID.
You have still not performed me three-fourths ID.
I don't know what tattoos. I don't know what you've been watching.
Okay, by the Supreme Court, it's not what I've been watching. It's the law. And right now, you guys are in violation of color and law.
Okay.
Because you are at my door with guns, and I feel for my life. I have not committed no crime. This is law. I have not committed a crime.
We're suspecting of harming a fugitive.
No, I am not harming a fugitive.
Okay.
Because you have no evidence, video or audio of me having a fugitive. You are going off words.
Okay. That's why we're here to check it out.
Okay. There is no fugitive. Okay. We're all neighbors here. You need to knock on everybody's door.
Okay, not if they said they came here.
Okay, no, they didn't come here. Okay, why would she say he came here?
I don't know.
He didn't come here. I don't know why.
Okay,
so you saw him walk away?
He walked away. He walked
up.
To the back. Straight to the back. I don't know what's going on in the back. There's another subject.
Okay.
What's going on? What's going on? I just told you what I seen.
Can we check your house?
Get a warrant.
Would you allow us to check your house?
Get a warrant.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the door.
Amaral uploaded the video of the August 25th exchange on September 2nd to YouTube, and it has since been viewed more than 328,000 times. As we reported earlier in the week, the UN Tuesday heard from the Palestinians about their expectations from the peace process and the international community at a press conference with Hanan Ashrawi, member of the Executive Committee of the Palestine Liberation Organization and of the Palestinian Legislative Council.
We are fully convinced that this latest tragic, horrific assault on Gaza and the carnage that ensued and the massacres cannot be allowed to not just pass, but to repeat itself. Because this did not come out of isolation. It is part of a pattern of Israeli behavior that every 2-3 years is repeated, resorting to enormous violence and cruelty, targeting civilians, and then achieving no results other than this tremendous pain. And at the same time, in the West Bank, there is a rapid increase of settlement activities, of land theft, land confiscation, as well as an ongoing policy of home demolitions, ethnic cleansing, Jerusalem and Area C, the illegal annexation of Jerusalem, daily killings and theft of resources. And, of course, this latest escalation, as you have heard, of the theft of 2,811 dunams in the Bethlehem area that's already besieged and most of its territory has been stolen for the Gush Etzion settlement block. This is another war crime to add to Israel's record. So the two things that are ongoing, number one, Israel's ongoing occupation with its cruelty, with its unilateral measures, and with its lack of accountability. That is the other real issue, which is Israeli impunity without any intervention and without any serious accountability. And this cycle cannot continue. We have to put things in context and we have to address the real issues, the real causes. And the last thing we need is another open-ended peace process in the same way as we've had an open-ended occupation with freeing Israel's hand to create facts on the ground and to destroy the chances of peace. To us, the horror of Gaza has become a real game changer. Not only are we not willing to go back to the status quo ante, but we need to deal with this, but deal with it, as I said, in context. We need to ensure that the causes that have given rise to such a pattern, a persistent pattern of behavior, are dealt with. Of course, immediately we have very concrete steps that we have to pursue, including the opening of the crossing points to allow relief aid to come in immediately, emergency assistance and so on, because the situation is absolutely drastic, and that has to be done. We also have to ensure that the things, the very simple requests that are minimal in terms of, for example, expanding the fishing area and territorial waters. In the Declaration of Principles in the agreement, it's 20 kilometers or 20 nautical miles. I think in the Israel has limited them to 3 miles. Now they're talking about 6 miles, and maybe if they're kind enough, they will extend it to 12 miles. That's not the issue. The buffer zone. Gaza is such a small territory with very, very limited agricultural land. What Israel calls the buffer zone of 300 or 500 meters takes away most of Gaza's arable land, agricultural land. And Israel declared it unilaterally a buffer zone or a security zone. But we must address issues also of long-term construction, reconstruction. And we must get Israel to respect signed agreements, because when we talk about the airport and the seaport and so on, these are also signed agreements. These are part of the Declaration of Principles dating back to 1993. I mean, 1993. This is nothing new and it's not outrageous. But most importantly, we want to link Gaza and the West Bank. We cannot allow Israel to continue the separation, territorial, demographic, political, and so on, between Gaza and the West Bank. There is in the agreements a safe passage or a corridor or whatever between Gaza and the West Bank. We have to implement that. However, we remain committed that the only solution is ending the occupation, achieving a just peace, ensuring Palestinian freedom, independence, and sovereignty on the 67 borders, especially after 2012 and the recognition of Palestine as a state, albeit under occupation. We need to achieve this independence. And Israel has to understand that there are limits to its behavior and there is accountability for Israel. So we do not want to see this pattern continue. And, of course, it is a very cruel exercise in futility, by the way, because no matter how much you bomb and you shell and you destroy lives and whole areas and you pulverize neighborhoods and you demolish homes and you obliterate whole families. By now there are about 90 families that have gone off the population register. 90 families, you know, the Palestinian families are quite large in terms of not just the nuclear family but also the extended family. So when they blow up a building, a family home with several stories and so on, they destroy 22, 25 members of the same family. There are many children. I mean, I cannot tell you the impact of this terror and destruction on the lives of ordinary Palestinians. There are children. The majority of Palestinian children are, of course, traumatized. The majority of the population is in a state of shock till now. But there are children who have no families left and nowhere to go. There are children who have witnessed their families being torn to bits. There are people, over 500,000 Palestinians do not have places to go to. They have been displaced. Now, these displaced people may be able to go to relatives or friends that are already overcrowded in their areas and whose means have already been overstretched. So there is a plan to try to help those families to take in other families, to help them financially and so on. But there are many things that have to be addressed. I would say, in order to address these real issues, we mustn't put up with Israeli lawlessness and violence again, or unilateralism, or its land grab in Gaza. If there is to be real peace, it certainly cannot be a U.S. monopoly. It has to be multilateral, and the responsibility of the international community where we are here. The so-called peace process has had very serious flaws. Now is not the time to discuss them, but we can if you want. And the latest Kerry initiative has certainly enabled Israel to persist with this, with its policies, whether settlement activities or violence and so on. And it has allowed Israeli impunity to continue. But now, since 2012, we have pursued a policy of addressing the international community. We have acceded to 15 international agreements and conventions. And these are a clear indication of not just where our heart lies, but where our policies are, because we believe that we want to build a sovereign Palestinian state based on international values and principles and so on that would enable us to have a real democratic and thriving state and to be an actor in the region, a positive actor or an actor for a positive force in the region. And, of course, part of our plan now is not to continue with the same pattern, but to with the pattern of a futile peace process for its own sake. So we have sent envoys to go and see the Secretary of State to the U.S. Today, they're leaving today. They will be tomorrow in Washington to inform the U.S. that we need a clear commitment to the 67 boundaries and to the end of the occupation. Israeli occupation within a specified time frame, not open-ended, whether, as we said, open-ended occupation or open-ended peace process, but a specific time frame. And, of course, the Arab League will be discussing this in its meeting on September 7th, next week. And we will be seeking a Security Council resolution on ending the occupation within that specified date. And any solution must be based on international law, cannot violate international law and UN conventions and agreements. We will pursue this further by acceding to remaining or to other international conventions and agreements because we believe it's our right. We want to be an active member of this international community, and we will pursue accountability for Israel. As I said, one of the main problems has been ongoing Israeli impunity. And seeking accountability can be done in a variety of ways, by acceding to the Rome Statute, yes, and going to the International Criminal Court, or even going to the International Court of Justice. Civil society initiatives like the BDS initiative, boycott, divestment, sanctions, and so on. There are already certain things in place, including the European guidelines, for example, or labeling or boycotting settlement products. We have already addressed the high contracting parties, addressed Geneva for a meeting of the high contracting parties of the Fourth Geneva Convention. And we hope, and I understand Switzerland is moving, is coordinating with the different members to be able to convene and to act quickly. We have addressed the Human Rights Commission in Geneva, and we are very grateful for the formation of the Commission of Inquiry. The Human Rights Council, not Commission, Commission of Inquiry, and Saudi Arabia has agreed to fund this commission, and we hope it will act quickly, and we will cooperate fully with this commission. We also believe that we will move internally to enhance our national unity. We will empower our government of national accord, because we believe one of the reasons, one of the motivations behind this assault was also to destroy national unity and the reconciliation. And we should empower this government. Among the steps, it would be to convene the temporary leadership framework for the PLO, and of course to continue to reform and revitalize the PLO. And we believe we need elections as soon as we are able to do that. National elections. We will continue and to develop and exercise different forms of nonviolent resistance, including the legal and the human and the popular forms of resistance. But I just want to end by cautioning against the use of wrong terms misrepresenting the issue. By no stretch of the imagination, by no means can we describe this latest Israeli aggression against a captive population with nowhere to go as a state of self-defense. Mm-hmm. The occupation is a state of constant ongoing aggression that manifests itself in different ways in the West Bank, including Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip. And it's the Palestinians who have been deprived of any type of protection or the right to use self-defense. Israel has had enough time and space to continue to violate not just Palestinian rights and devalue Palestinian lives, but also to persist in its policies of victimization and the use of violence. I'm glad to say that it's no longer the same where there are many taboos about exposing the real nature of this occupation. Now we do have social media, fortunately, and witnesses and courageous members of the press who are willing to speak out and to challenge the prevailing stereotypical and distorted discourse in the public domain. We are seeing a willingness to hold Israel accountable. It is increasing because there is a public opinion that is challenging its own governments. And the self-interest of governments notwithstanding, they will understand ultimately that they cannot continue to be complicit with Israeli violations and criminality and lawlessness, because the implications and ramifications are enormous, not just within Palestine, Israel, but within the region and even globally.
In honor of the just passed Labor Day weekend, imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal discussed the way America treats workers from behind the wall.
Labor Days. What is Labor Day 2014? A day like all other days, not in honor of workers, but in cruel irony of workers' impotence and defeat. Yeah, celebrate Labor Day, sure. But attack unions, denigrate union organizing, while calling for wage cuts and deregulation. Witness today's unprecedented assault on teachers and their unions. They're called lazy and incompetent. And even Hollywood joins the fray with a recent movie, remember Bad Teacher? You think you'll be seeing Bad CEO anytime soon? I didn't think so. Once again, Hollywood sides with the powerful whilst being labeled liberal. Workers are working harder today and getting considerably less in return. Wages are low and respect for working people is even lower. Unions are demonized. Labor Day, a day like all others, when labor and its unions are spit on. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Also in honor of Labor Day, a little music from Pete Seeger.
Debout, les dames de la terre. Debout, les forces de la faim. La raison tournant sans la terre, c'est l'éruption de la fin. Du passé, fais au table rasa, foule l'esclave, debout, debout. Le monde va changer de base, nous ne sommes rien, soyons tout. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous. Et demain, l'international sera le genre humain. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous. Et demain, l'international sera le genre humain. Wake up, you prisoners of hunger. The world is changing at the base. We who have been nothing will be everything. Of the past we shall make a clean slate. Impossible.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.